It's Thursday, February 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, UN-sponsored talks on Syria are suspended in Geneva.
I've therefore taken this decision to bring a temporary pause. Temporary pause. This is not the end, and it's not the failure of the talks.
Donor nations meet to help fund humanitarian relief projects in Syria. President Obama visits a mosque, and the Republican presidential field gets smaller. All that plus what country music fans can look for coming up on International Edition. The United Nations on Wednesday called off the fractious Syrian peace talks in Geneva until the end of the month. UN envoy Staffan de Mistura, who was alternating between discussions with representatives of the Bashar al-Assad government and opposition groups trying to overthrow him, called the delay until February 25th a temporary pause. He said it's not the demise of what had been the first Syrian peace effort in 2 years.
The UN cannot allow simply procedural matters to actually become more important than actually the result for the humanitarian situation of the Syrian people who have been waiting for us to deliver, this time not a conference, but something concrete for them.
De Mistura emphasized that this is just a temporary suspension of the talks. He told reporters in Geneva there are several reasons to hope that the talks will resume and that progress will be made.
They came and they stayed. Not only, but both sides insisted on the fact that they are interested in having the political process started. Three, I've already fixed a date for the next talks, 25th of February. Four, I find that at this stage it's very important to give an opportunity to those who have been insisting that the talks need to take place, that they also address the issues which have been pending and unresolved.
The temporary halt in the talks came as the Syrian army claimed that it has ended the rebel siege of two Shiite villages in Aleppo, handing Assad's government a major victory. Syrian state television said the army and Shiite militias, known as the Popular Defense Committees, had broken the rebels' three-year blockade around Nubul and Zahra, part of the government's advance in Aleppo province in recent days. The rebel defeat allows Syrian forces to take control of a supply route from Aleppo to the Turkish border. The United States, meanwhile, blamed the pause in peace talks on Russian airstrikes that disrupted humanitarian aid to Syrians. State Department spokesman John Kirby said Russian airstrikes around Aleppo focused mainly on opposition forces, not Islamic State militants. Syria's state news agency Sana said that rebels had fired several rockets into the southern city of Daraa, killing 10 civilians and wounding 41 in a residential area. Daraa is a contested area with some parts held by forces loyal to Assad and others under the control of armed opposition groups trying to overthrow him. The pause in the Syria talks comes as 70 world leaders are due later today in London for the fourth Syria Donors Conference. The United Nations wants $9 billion to help fund humanitarian relief and projects to help refugees. Henry Ridgewell spoke to a U.S. senior delegate and reports on expectations for the meeting.
The toll on civilians grows heavier by the month as Syria's civil war enters its sixth year. The United Nations estimates more than 250,000 people have been killed. 4.5 million Syrians have fled the country, and a further 6.6 million are internally displaced, half of them children. Previous donor conferences have focused on raising funds for humanitarian relief. U.S. Assistant Secretary for Refugees and Migration, Ann Richard, says the agenda in London is different.
This year, there's more ambitious goals, which are to do more to educate children, to get jobs for the refugees, to bring development resources to bear, to help people get to safety, not just in the region, but beyond as well.
World leaders are aiming to raise $9 billion. Last year, the United Nations received only $3.3 billion of the $8.4 billion promised by donors. Jordan warned this week that the dam could burst if it did not receive more support to deal with the estimated 630,000 refugees on its soil. Mohamed Momani is Minister for Media Affairs.
Europe and the international community can give enough commitment and support to shouldering part of the responsibility that the host countries are undertaking in this period of time.
Richard says the United States is working towards accepting thousands more Syrian refugees.
We have a process that is slow and thorough and intent on ensuring that no bad actors get into the United States. And we're trying to do as good a job as possible to bring in more refugees without undermining the program.
The images of drowned three-year-old refugee Aylan Kurdi and the pictures of people starving in the town of Madaya have focused attention on the plight of Syria's people. The response of the world's governments is being watched closely. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Coming up, President Obama visits a mosque for the first time as president, and another Republican drops out of the presidential race. This is VOA.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. President Barack Obama made his first visit to a mosque during his nearly 8 years in office on Wednesday. He told worshipers at a Baltimore mosque that an attack on one religious faith is an attack on all faiths. VOA's Chris Simpkins has more.
President Obama delivered a simple message.
We're one American family, and when any part of our family starts to feel separate or second class or targeted, it tears at the very fabric of our nation.
Obama told the gathering at the Islamic Society of Baltimore he's concerned about hostilities directed towards Muslim Americans in the wake of the Paris and San Bernardino terrorist attacks. Even this mosque has been threatened with violence.
You've seen too often people conflating the horrific acts of terrorism with the beliefs of an entire faith. And of course, recently we've heard inexcusable political rhetoric against Muslim Americans.
Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump has proposed a temporary ban on any new Muslim immigrants entering the United States and setting up a Muslim database. Other Republican contenders have rejected the idea. Pakistani-American Ahmed Rana and his wife say they're glad Obama and Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton are speaking out against discrimination towards Muslims.
We voted for him twice. He got elected. And especially Hillary Clinton, the sign she saw, we all are Muslim, that shows support, that she has more respect for Muslim, and I think mostly majority of the Muslim going to support her.
Obama talked about government efforts to work with Muslim American leaders to counter attempts by extremist groups to radicalize members of the Muslim community in the United States.
This warped thinking that has found adherents around the world, including as we saw tragically in Boston and Chattanooga and San Bernardino, is real. So all of us have the task of expressing our religious faith in a way that seeks to build bridges rather than to divide.
Retired veterinarian Anwar Chowdhury was glad the president came.
His comments, his speech was very, very encouraging. Not for us. We have to help other people and they have to help us. to have a strong fabric of this country.
Obama called on Americans to stay true to American values, such as freedom of religion, and to speak up for tolerance and respect.
You fit in here, right here.
Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
The New Hampshire primary is next Tuesday, February 9th, but the field on the Republican side will be a little smaller. Two more Republican candidates have dropped out of this year's race for president. Rand Paul, a senator from Kentucky, and Rick Santorum, a former senator from Pennsylvania, both announced they were suspending their campaigns on Wednesday. I spoke with VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone about what this means for the Republican race and other issues as we head towards the November election.
Didn't take long, did it? We got the first results out of Iowa, and already three of the Republicans have decided to call it a day. Not surprising in a way in the era of Donald Trump, who swept this Republican field for months now. The interesting thing, of course, being that Trump finished second in Iowa after great expectation. And as we move into the New Hampshire primary, the pressure will be on Trump to perform well. He's well ahead in New Hampshire. But will the Iowa results give someone like Marco Rubio a big boost and allow him to jump into contention? But yes, Santorum, Huckabee, and Rand Paul just didn't seem to be their year. And two of those men won the last two Iowa caucuses, but this was not a repeat here in 2016.
You mentioned Donald Trump. There's some news today that Donald Trump is saying that Ted Cruz, quote-unquote, stole the Iowa caucuses by some campaigning. Had to do with an email that was sent saying Ben Carson was going to drop out or something like that? Is that just sour grapes?
I think what it shows is that we've seen a real deterioration in the relationship between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz over the last several weeks, stemming back a few debates. And it's only going to get worse now. Trump certainly is disappointed by his finish in Iowa. All the polls had showed him winning. And some of the rivals, by the way, were happy to say, well, welcome to the big leagues, Mr. Trump. This is actually how it works in politics. The polls don't always show how it's going to wind up. So that's why it's a real challenge now for Trump to deliver on those polls in New Hampshire, where he's been leading for so long. But I think the dynamic between Trump and Cruz has the potential to only get worse. Now, who that eventually hurts down the line, I don't know. But we're going to start to get into real nasty time now. And especially coming out of New Hampshire, next week's primary, you may see more Republicans falling by the wayside. The ones we've seen the last few days are the conservative ones. I think some of the so-called establishment or more moderate candidates, based on what happens in New Hampshire, some of them may decide to leave the race as well.
And after New Hampshire, we have states like South Carolina, which is typically a conservative state, though I believe President Obama won it last time, did he not?
Well, yeah, he did well there, and we, in large part because of African-American support, and that's what Hillary Clinton is banking on down the line. Bernie Sanders has exploded on the scene here. He's got a lot of support from young college students. If you look at the exit polls out of Iowa, Hillary Clinton did very poorly with anyone basically under the age of 40. So she's got a real problem there winning over youth. But as we move into the South, South Carolina later in February, and then March 1st, we have what we call Super Tuesday, several states voting on the same day, many of them in the South, many of them with large African-American populations. This is the backbone for the Clinton campaign, because Sanders has had limited success reaching out and engaging minority voters. Right now, that is a solid strength for Clinton. And unless there's some huge change, especially in a place like South Carolina, she's going to be favored there.
And Election Day is only about 9 months away. So, Jim Malone, thank you very much. You can follow Jim's coverage of Election 2016, starting with the New Hampshire primary next Tuesday, February 9th. You can do that on our website. That's voanews.com. Coming up, we'll check what's trending on social media and what can fans of country music look for on tour this year. Sarah Williams and Nikki Strong will tell us. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. UN agencies are mobilizing communities in Latin America and the Caribbean to stop the spread of the Zika virus, which has infected tens of thousands of people in about 25 countries. Lisa Schlein has more on the UN efforts from Geneva.
The Zika virus in itself is not much of a threat. Its symptoms are mild and not life-threatening. But the virus is suspected of causing birth defects in newborn babies. More than 4,000 cases of microcephaly, a condition that causes abnormally small brains in babies, have been found in Brazil. The explosive surge of this disease has prompted the World Health Organization to declare the Zika virus a global public health emergency. No vaccine is available to protect pregnant women against the virus, so WHO is urging communities to do battle against the disease to protect pregnant women from being bitten by the Aedes mosquito, which transmits the virus. WHO Maternal Health Director Anthony Costello says communities must remove all stagnant pools where the mosquitoes flourish. He says mass community engagement and mobilization of women's groups can do a lot to provide women and pregnant mothers with the information they need to protect themselves and their babies.
If we learnt one thing from Ebola, mobilizing communities is an absolutely critical public health measure. And then we need to educate health workers, particularly the midwives and obstetricians and healthcare workers that look after pregnant women, and make sure that everyone gets the information on risks and diagnostics as hopefully the situation changes.
Spokesman Christophe Bouyrak says the UN Children's Fund is running a community mobilization campaign in Brazil with messages on how to avoid mosquito bites and eliminate breeding sites,
including using insect repellent, covering as much of the body as possible with long, light-colored clothing, removing places where mosquitoes can breed, and putting screens on windows and doors.
UNICEF is mainly engaged in Brazil, but the agency is also scaling up its support to other countries in the region as a precautionary measure. UNICEF is launching a $9 million appeal to finance the programs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In a related story, Latin American health ministers agreed on a public information campaign and to boost the number of medical workers to fight the Zika virus. The 14 officials held emergency talks in Montevideo, Uruguay, on Wednesday. Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff said her government will spare no expense in fighting the mosquito that carries the virus. Brazil has reported nearly 4,000 suspected cases of the birth defect microcephaly since October. But experts are puzzled why microcephaly is nearly non-existent in other Latin American countries where the Zika virus is present. The virus outbreak took a worrisome development this week after health officials in Dallas County, Texas, reported what appears to be the first Zika case in the United States transmitted through sexual contact. The patient was apparently infected after having sex with someone who is suspected to have caught Zika in Venezuela. Time now for a look at trending topics online, and for that, International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins us. Welcome, G.
Hi, Dave.
What are we looking at today?
It's all about drinking, eating, and its impact on our health and society. The U.S. Public Health Agency, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, urge young women not to drink unless they're using contraception. This is to reduce babies born with a condition called the fetal alcohol syndrome, and the agency also said half of all pregnancies in the U.S. are unplanned. The National Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, known as NOFAS, quickly shared an infographic after the announcement that shows up to 1 in 20 school children in the states have the syndrome, and drinking while pregnant costs the country $5.5 billion.
Wow, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Now, is this for women or is this also for their male partners?
Well, the recommendation is only applicable to women, so understandably, some people are finding the recommendation to be a bit sexist. In the comments section, many people are asking the agency to increase women's access to birth control of their choice and to ask the alcohol industry to pay for problems their products cost.
Hmm. Now, any other news today?
The next item is also food-related, but on a brighter note. The famous U.S. ice cream maker Ben & Jerry's is releasing not one but four non-dairy frozen desserts. Now, many food companies in America are introducing vegan products, which means no animal or animal byproducts at all.
Okay, now what makes ice cream vegan, and perhaps more importantly, what are the flavors?
The quote-unquote cream is made with almond milk and coconut oil, and the flavors are chocolate fudge brownie, chunky monkey, coffee caramel fudge, and PB and cookies. Now, in the comment section of the Ben & Jerry's Facebook post, one person commented, "Non-dairy is a good start, but making them gluten-free as well would be even better. Hashtag celiac problems. As you know, people with that disease have to avoid gluten for life." Now, to that comment, another person wrote, "Does anyone else get irrationally irritated at all of the people who are special snowflakes demanding B&J makes special snowflakes versions of their ice cream to cater to them?" Dave, all I can say to that is that the word irrational was a great diction. Back to you.
That's VOA social media correspondent G. Abby Lee. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. And you can send us a tweet. Our handle on Twitter is at VOA_IE. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite music artist perform live. Now, with so many new music CDs released last year and this year, many country music performers are hitting the road. VOA Music's Nikki Strong, that is, joined International Edition's Sarah Williams to tell us who might be headed your way soon.
Nikki, I heard two of your favorite artists are headed out on tour, Chris Stapleton and Miranda Lambert.
Yes, Sarah. They both are headed out, but not together. Not on the same lineup. Chris Stapleton and Hank Williams Jr. are doing a limited run where they will be co-headlining a tour that starts August 5th in Tampa, Florida, and they'll hit 8 U.S. cities throughout the month before wrapping up on August 27th in Cincinnati, Ohio. Miranda Lambert is doing her Keeper of the Flame tour with Kit Moore and Brothers Osborne opening, and that's a summer tour that kicks off in May. Also around the same time, she's going to be doing Kenny Chesney's Spread the Love tour as well with Sam Hunt and Old Dominion. Most of those dates are in the summer. So she'll be all over the place in the U.S. during the summer.
Well, will Miranda be touring abroad as well?
Yeah. In fact, she will be hitting England, Ireland, and Scotland March 11th through the 13th for the Country to Country tour. Other artists on that tour in Europe include Dwight Yoakam, Thomas Rhett, and Ashley Monroe. And she's working on new music, too. So she's busy.
Yeah. What other artists are also touring outside the U.S.?
Okay, so there are several. Let me see how many I can get to. Carrie Underwood, the Storyteller Tour, is underway now. The first 2 weeks in March, she has dates in Sweden, Norway, and the UK, and she heads to Canada in late May as well. Easton Corbin and the Swan Brothers are the opening acts for her tour, and $1 from each ticket sold will be contributed to the CATS Foundation to benefit schools and animal charities in her hometown in Oklahoma, so I think that's pretty cool. Dierks Bentley's 20 2016 Somewhere on a Beach Tour. Kicks off May 12th in New Jersey and includes 4 dates in Europe, April 21st through the 24th in Ireland, England, and Scotland. And he will be joined by Randy Houser and Cam. Garth Brooks' World Tour is on now through July. He and his wife, Trisha Yearwood, are touring the States, but will be in Ontario late March and the first couple of days in April. And they also announced that the duet CD they've been talking about doing for a while now may actually happen this year. So I'll keep my fingers crossed. Also hitting Canada in a couple of weeks, February 14th through the 19th, Brad Paisley, for the winter leg of his Crushing It World Tour. And he will be taking Eric Paisley and Cam with him. And Luke Bryan with his Kill the Lights Tour with Little Big Town and Dustin Lynch hits Ontario in June.
Wow. Well, you can hear more about artists headed your way on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook at VOA Music and on Twitter at VOA underscore music. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
Thank you, Sarah.
We go way out where there ain't nobody. We turn this cornfield into a party.
The Pro Football Hall of Fame announces its latest inductees on Saturday, the day before Sunday's Super Bowl championship game. It turns out that one of the nominees, the late Ken Stabler, the former quarterback of the Oakland Raiders, had concussion-induced brain damage. Now, Stabler died last year of cancer, but he asked that his brain be studied to see if years of playing football had damaged it. Turns out that it had. A biopsy of Stabler's brain found lesions that had likely been in place for decades. Doctors rated his case as the second most severe rating on a 4-point scale used to evaluate so-called CTE. Some 5,000 former players sued the NFL, claiming it hid the dangers of repeated head trauma and agreed to a settlement that could cost the league $1 billion. That settlement is under appeal. Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. Daryl Smith was our engineer. We welcome your questions or comments. You can log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. Our Twitter handle is at VOA underscore IE. And you can always log on to our website, voanews.com. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There is a rising tide of religious persecution emerging worldwide, and it disproportionately threatens religious minority groups. This threat touches Christians in the Middle East, Yazidis in Iraq, Baha'is in Iran, Hindus in Pakistan and Bangladesh, Muslims in India, or Sunni Muslims in Shia areas, or vice versa. The threat, said Special Advisor for Religious Minorities in the Near East and South and Central Asia, Knox Thames, is clear and present. Terrorists and non-state actors such as ISIL, the Nusra Front, and Al-Qaeda are some of the worst persecutors of religious minorities. But individual attackers have also perpetrated acts of violence against religious minorities. And unfortunately, in far too many places, governments continue to limit the exercise of religious freedoms. Protecting and promoting the universal right to freedom of religion is central to American foreign policy. Not only is it the right thing to do, said Special Advisor Knox, it is a smart thing to do as it plays a major role in contributing to more stable, progressive, and dynamic societies. Wherever people face religious persecution, the United States is at work finding ways to help. For example, the U.S. pressures governments to enact reforms so that religious minorities are able to freely practice their faith. Militarily, through airstrikes, the U.S. is providing protection for minority religions to remain in their ancestral homeland. The U.S. continues to provide humanitarian assistance to Syrians and Iraqis, including refugees and displaced populations, and supports resettlement for those who cannot safely return home. The U.S. is encouraging countries in the Middle East to support, through education, respect for human rights and religious freedom. Governments in the region are also being urged to take steps to protect religious minorities during holy days and religious gatherings. The United States said President Barack Obama will continue to work with a broad coalition against those who have subjected religious minorities to unspeakable violence and persecution. All people deserve the fundamental dignity of practicing their faith free from fear, intimidation, and violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4.